and my fellow Pennsylvanians.
This state's electoral votes are key to who wins the presidency, and both of the candidates know it.
We win Pennsylvania, we win the whole deal. You know that. Just like last time.
But states like Pennsylvania are going to be incredibly important.
The only thing left on the board is Pennsylvania. The president cannot get to the finish line without the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
One state all four candidates are visiting today is Pennsylvania. Its 20 electoral votes are highly coveted, and the Keystone State could end up being one of the determining factors in the race.
Jill's a Philly girl, but I'm a Scranton girl.
Later today, we're joining City and State and Muhlenberg College and hosting a debate with the Senate candidates. Now, we have listeners all across Pennsylvania and Washington, D.C. and New York and elsewhere who are going to be watching the debate. To provide a bit more context, we're sitting down with Bob Orenstein and Kathy Reinhart. They're veteran Lehigh Valley journalists. For a combined 70-plus years, they've reported on the politics and the personalities of the Lehigh Valley. Recently, they founded Armchair Lehigh Valley. It's a grassroots newsletter that aims to provide information on federal, state, and local elections and the politics of Lehigh and Northampton counties. I personally have found it incredibly insightful while preparing for this debate, and I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Welcome to my kitchen table.
Yeah, good morning.
Thanks for having us.
So I have been big fans of both of yours over the years, reading your product that you've put out. But, you know, specifically today in the Lehigh Valley, there's, a historic political milestone. And you also, just in the last month, have also put up a political milestone, which is this amazing new newsletter. So if maybe ladies first, we could start with Kathy, your background, and then Bob, and then we can kind of plunge into this new venture that both of you have. And then we'll certainly take listeners on a pretty granular journey of Lehigh Valley politics.
Well, I have been a journalist in the Lehigh Valley for over 40 years. I was at the Morning Call for most of my career as a reporter and as an editor. And I was heavily involved in covering political campaigns. As a young reporter, I covered the Don Ritter-Jane Wells Schooley race that drew a lot of national attention. And then in later years, I ended up helping other reporters cover races and guiding them. I left the paper about 3 years ago, took a buyout along with Bob and some other longtime journalists there. And I've been doing some freelancing in between. And I just hit upon this idea that I felt that there wasn't enough information out there for people who really wanted to know who was running and what they stood for. So I called up Bob and I said, I had this idea for a newsletter. And he said, I'm in. And then I'm like, well, I guess I have to do this now. And we just spent the last couple months putting it together. And so far, we've had great reception.
Well, count me in as the honorary president of your Washington, D.C. fan club, because I'm a big fan of the newsletter. And as we count down to the debate this afternoon, I encourage all listeners to sign up for the newsletter. But Bob, tell listeners a little about your background.
Yeah, I've also spent about 40 years in journalism, first as in a radio station in Lewiston, Maine for a year, and then came to Philadelphia to go to graduate school at Temple and get a journalism degree, and started working for a small paper outside of Philadelphia, then moved on to the Pottsville Republican for 5 years, and then in the mid-80s joined the Morning Call, where I spent 32 years there. I was a reporter and an editor in various bureaus. And the last 10 years of my job, I oversaw the opinion pages at the Morning Call. And like Kathy, in fact, we both left on the same day in February of 2019. So it's appropriate, I guess, we're working together. I also took a buyout at that time as well.
So the media landscape across the Lehigh Valley, across the Commonwealth, across our nation has certainly changed over the years. And the political landscape in Pennsylvania has also changed. The Lehigh Valley arguably has been fairly purple. But maybe you tell me, guys, should we start in 1998 when it was an open congressional seat and a guy named Pat Toomey was running? Or where, you know, I think it'd be very important for listeners to kind of get a sense of the winds of the Lehigh Valley.
Yeah, I think we can go back a little bit beyond that. You know, we've had for a number of years, it was pretty much Democratic congressmen, starting with Francis C. Walter, served 16 terms starting in 1933, followed by, and he died while he was in office, and Fred Rooney from Bethlehem then served nearly 8 full terms because he had to fill the remainder of Francis Walter's term. He was also a Democrat. And then in 1978, he lost his reelection bid to Don Ritter, who was the first Republican in 40-some-odd years to win a seat in the Lehigh Valley. And then we started seeing rotation from Don Ritter, who served 7 terms, and he lost to Paul McHale in 1992. And Paul McHale served 3 terms, did not run for reelection after that. And then Pat Toomey served as the Lehigh Valley Congressman, Republican. He served 3 terms and did not run for re-election to the House there, and then eventually went on and became the Senator. And then Charlie Dent, Republican, followed Pat Toomey. He served 6 terms and he resigned in the middle of 2018. Charlie Dent was a very strong critic of President Donald Trump at the time. And Susan Wilde ended up filling out the remainder of his term for, it was only 2 months by the time the election was held, and then also won the election to represent the Lehigh Valley in Congress. So we've kind of flip-flopped over the last 20-some-odd years between Republicans and Democrats.
Kathy, let me ask you, I really appreciate that history, Bob. Proud to say I'm from the Lehigh Valley. I haven't lived there for 20 years, but it's that's just great perspective. I wasn't even familiar with some of the names, frankly, before I was born. Kathy, let me ask you, with Paul McHale, he made a decisive vote with the Clinton impeachment. He bucked his leadership. There's plenty of instances where Pat Toomey bucked his Republican leadership. The same with Charlie Dent. What do you think it is about the kind of independent streak of Lehigh Valley elected officials?
I think that they feel that they can vote their heart or the way they want because they have enjoyed the support of their constituents. People have crossed party lines to vote for Charlie or for Pat Toomey, Susan Wilde. So that creates a situation where I think they feel comfortable that they can vote how they want to.
And Bob, give some examples. I mean, 32 years, the morning call of, for example, the Paul McHale impeachment vote or other kind of iconic instances where the congressman in charge surprised you.
Yeah, I mean, McHale, Democrat, but obviously independent when he voted on the Clinton impeachment at that time. And, he ended up not running for re-election and moving on to, other positions in Washington. I think, Charlie Dent, talk about someone who bucked his party. Well, at least the president, Charlie Dent was a very vocal critic of President Trump. And he was one of a number of Republican congressmen who decided not to run for re-election after in 2018. And again, I think that tends and bringing it back to the Lehigh Valley, show that there's a very, independent, common sense kind of trait that maybe perhaps people look for in their congressmen in the Lehigh Valley. It's not necessarily along party lines. Obviously, that factors in. But, we've seen, again, the seats flipping back and forth in recent years between Republican and Democrat. And the people who've been there have really not been on the fringes of either side. They've been somewhat more in the center, some slightly a little bit more right, some slightly a little bit more on the left side. But pretty much they're a little more moderate than a lot of the other people in Congress you see.
Before we go any deeper, just tell folks I'm certainly curious. I mean, at what point did the idea of a super granular Lehigh Valley political newsletter come about? And, I'd love to talk a little more about some of the recent additions of it. But it was one of those things, you're in the shower or you're out for a walk with the dog. I mean, at what point did the light bulb go off?
Well, after I left the paper, I found that I really wasn't as connected to politics as I was. So when I went to vote, I didn't really know who I was voting for. And I would end up Googling names before I went to the polls because I didn't want to just base my vote on a campaign flyer or an ad or whatever. And I felt there has to be a way for people to, you know, really find out what people stand for. Go beyond the I'm bipartisan or I work for the people. There's a lot of journalism today where, you know, you're interviewing a candidate and you don't get beyond that soundbite. You don't really know, well, how did they vote? Where do they stand on this particular issue? And I thought about it a lot. And I, after the fall campaigns where you see where a lot of people got elected to school boards that you didn't know who they were, and this whole movement built up about the anti-masking and anti-CRT and a whole group of new people came in, but that really wasn't really reflected in a lot of the reporting that was going on. And I mean, the same thing on with Democrats, like, well, who are these people? What do they stand for? You don't really know anymore. A lot of the local media, like nationally, their staffs have been depleted by no fault of their own. And they don't really have the time to do the type of reporting that Bob and I did as young reporters, where you were assigned to one race and you covered everything about that race. You went to the debates, you looked at their campaign finance reports, you went down to the county election office and looked at their voting record to see whether they actually voted in the past. And that type of stuff, it can't happen anymore in the media environment. So I thought, well, maybe if I got a couple people together and we just did that old fashioned type of reporting, then people could go to our site and kind of get an in-depth look at who they're voting for.
Yeah, Kathy, very persuasive. She pitched me her idea and I said, I'm in. You know, I didn't hesitate. You know, I was also looking for something else a little more challenging to do than, you know, sitting around and preparing food and tending to my garden and things like that. So this is an opportunity to get back into, you know, something that I really loved and enjoyed for a number of years.
Yeah, thank you on many levels. And I think I speak for a lot of our listeners. And we need this kind of transparency across the Commonwealth. But what I found super helpful was one of your first newsletters was a breakdown of the new legislative lines looking at the state House and state Senate races. And just a few moments ago, when we were talking about the independent nature, the purple nature, whatever adjective we want to use of the congressional representation over the years, I think it'd be helpful also if you could maybe speak to the state House candidates and personalities and for that matter, state Senate.
Yeah, I did Tom Shortell, who also had worked number of years at the Morning Call and has since left. He dived into those new districts and kind of painted the landscape of how things are going to look in the different districts. And we have some new districts have popped up. So, you know, he deserves a lot of credit for doing that in his spare time. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that we believe we can, you know, bring to readers. We're not looking to replace any news source out there. We're really looking to complement the news sources that are out there, giving people another reference to look at as they make their decisions.
Yeah, I'd like to add that what we're striving to do in a very nonpartisan way is to present information that makes it easier for voters. So it was very important for us to lay out the landscape on the new districts and actually define them so people could go onto our site and look, oh, now I'm in the 183rd and I used to be in this district, because it's confusing as it is to try to figure out who your legislator is. And now it's all changed. So we have a new 14th Senate district that is pretty expansive. In Lehigh County, it stretches from Hanover and Salisbury and Whitehall Townships into Emmaus, Bushkill Township. I mean, it's all over the place. And we already have three Democrats and three Republicans running for that brand new seat. So there's no incumbent there. Then we have the new 22nd State House seat, and that includes parts of Allentown and Salisbury. And that, interestingly, was carved out to be majority Hispanic population in the hopes that you would see a, well, some people would hope see a Hispanic elected from the Lehigh Valley. But right now, my last look at the petitions, we had two Democrats, Joshua Siegel, who's a member of the Allentown City Council, and Noberto Dominguez. He is a founder of a creative guild of citizens, and he once tried to run for office, but he withdrew before the petitions were even filed. That's on the Democratic side. Republican, so far, is Robert E. Smith, a former member of the Allentown School Board. So I thought, I mean, we have to Friday, but I thought that there would be a lot more people running in that race, to be honest.
So I should have asked from the very beginning, just quickly, which part of the Lehigh Valley do both of you live in?
And I live in the borough of Northampton.
I live in Emmaus.
Okay, so we have Lehigh County and Northampton County represented.
That's right.
The reason I ask, because we're not coming up with new state house seats and state senate seats without a just tremendous changes in the population. So, Kathy, you reference the Latino community, which has grown exponentially over the years. And some of the townships that were referenced in that new Senate race, they went from quite rural to just all sorts of housing stock. So if you could also provide listeners a sense of that, you know, I think it's important as we have candidates and their campaign staff and activists from across the state coming to Muhlenberg College for this debate to get a sense of just how much the Lehigh Valley that they're seeing on Sunday afternoon is different than even just 20 years ago.
Well, in Allentown alone, Latinos are now the majority population. And in fact, you're seeing a big sea change in leadership. The new mayor, Matt Turk, he speaks Spanish, and one of his grandparents is Cuban. The police chief is Latino. The Allentown School Board has Latino members. So you're just seeing a whole change of people who are in decision-making power in the city, and they're making their mark in what they're doing. All the ring communities, the cities are and townships have seen a tremendous rise in the population of Latinos. So it's really a much different landscape from just even 4 years ago in terms of people who have the ability to affect change and impact voters.
Yeah, you know, the Lehigh Valley had the reputation in part because of Billy Joel's Allentown. That still people think is the way Allentown is today is a very, city that's on going downhill. The factories have closed, but Mack Trucks is still a force in Allentown. A lot of other business opportunities have grown up throughout the Lehigh Valley, a lot of distribution centers offering, new jobs for people. So the Valley is no longer Billy Joel's Allentown. It's moved beyond that. It's a diverse community, several colleges in the area that help bring prestige to the area. You know, you've seen the changing economic landscape. Arts is a very big part of what goes on in the Lehigh Valley. It's changed quite a bit over the years.
You mentioned, and in preparation for the debate, frankly, I'll give a little sneak preview. I've been wrapping my head around how we turn this into a federal policy question, but what you refer to as distribution centers, and I think as folks come down Route 22 or I-78, they can certainly see these large warehouse structures. And as I mentioned, just within my lifetime, this was all family farms. So maybe speak to that and who's working out there. What these are big multinational companies, but I think that would be because it is a major driver of the regional economy and plays a critical role as we're all thinking about supply chains.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon has two warehouses in the valley, one on either end, one in Lehigh County, one in Northampton County. FedEx has one of its biggest, if not the biggest, distribution center in the Northeast Mid-Atlantic states. And there are others too, other companies that have popped in with different warehouse operations, distribution centers. And you mentioned the loss of farmland or open space. And that's been a concern among a lot of local residents as we're seeing an increase in truck traffic and a disappearing of open space and farmland.
The warehouses are a great provider of jobs in the Lehigh Valley, and so much so, and there's so many of them, that the salaries are actually have gone up, and they're in the $18 to $20 plus range to work there, which if somebody doesn't have a skill level, does provide a somewhat decent job to have. And so it's just been, I think it's kind of helped the Lehigh Valley weather a lot of economic downturns in a way by having all these jobs available for people. In fact, a lot of, you know, people have left other jobs to go work in warehouses because they've provided a better wage than they could, say, working in a restaurant or someplace else.
So just another sneak preview. I've been hearing a lot about the infrastructure bill and about the just tremendous congestion on Lehigh Valley roadways and how one marries the other. I leave that to regional planners. But when I'm hearing all this of these large distribution centers and folks having to work there, but maybe not living nearby, just give folks a sense of traffic issues, transportation issues. What, if anything, if you had a magic wand, the infrastructure bill could solve? Because I think these are very much top of mind issues for Lehigh Valley voters.
Yeah, if I had a magic wand. Yeah. I mean, obviously, roads need to be upgraded. Highways need to be widened to handle the traffic. You know, one of the things in one of the Build Back Better proposals is to resume train service between Lehigh Valley and New York City. That's not going to be cheap, but at least the idea, once again, is being explored. There are bus services that take people living in the Lehigh Valley into downtown Manhattan to and from work every day. So there's obviously a need for some kind of better transportation. Whether it will actually happen, we don't know at this point, obviously, but that would be something that could improve quality of life here in the Valley, if you could hop on a train and get into Manhattan in 2 hours and not worry about fighting traffic.
I recently talked to Becky Bradley, the executive director of the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, about the infrastructure bill. And the Lehigh Valley is going to get about $380 million. But she said that is only scratching the surface of what the Lehigh Valley needs. Part of the problem is that a lot of our road systems are so outdated that things like the interchanges, I'm thinking of Route 309 and 22, which is going to be upgraded, but anybody who tries to get on or off around Tillman Street, off of 309, it's very difficult. And that's the type of thing that the Valley needs, is like to go through and fix a lot of the bridges and things that are just very outdated and make travel really hard. Another thing in the infrastructure bill is there is a lot of money for alternative transportation. And Becky Bradley told me that the Lanta is going to be getting a lot of money to continue to upgrade its busing system so it's not as reliant on gas. I mean, they already have a lot of electric power or buses, but this is like the way where they're going. But still, it's just what the infrastructure bill did is a drop in the bucket of what the Valley actually needs.
Well, the two of you have been super generous with your time. I have two final questions. If you could sum up in a few sentences, Muhlenberg College, the host of this debate, and I think it would be helpful for listeners who are joining either virtually watching the debate or who are traveling a distance to be in person on campus.
Yeah, I think probably among many of its assets, but its most visible one is the Polling Institute run by Chris Bork, who's obviously working on the debate. When he came in, I really can't say how many years ago exactly, but 8, 10 years ago, whatever it might be, we actually had a credible local polling operation that we could take the pulse of the Lehigh Valley as well as on things on statewide issues. I know he, you know, worked closely with the Morning Call in years past and putting out, you know, polls for, you know, the presidential elections, how the Lehigh Valley was leaning, and also for the congressional races. And that's just, I think, a great asset to people in the Lehigh Valley to get that kind of information and to see where things stand.
Yeah, Muhlenberg really is a leader when it comes to political you know, polling and, you know, even hosting this debate is, you know, a really a plum for the Lehigh Valley, because as we said, it's hard to find information out about candidates. And here we're going to have at least two of them on stage talking policy.
Yeah. And I want to reiterate, the debate is going to be entirely about policy. So final question. We have a lot of student listeners. We have diverse listeners all over the Commonwealth and beyond, but especially we get great feedback from student listeners. And, you know, I'd be curious if you would recommend a career in journalism. And if so, what advice you would give to someone who might be tuning in as an undergraduate?
I would definitely recommend a career in journalism, but you have to really work hard at it. It's something that you have to start when you're still in college, writing for your student newspaper, getting internships, and just keep plugging and plugging away at it. And these days, you really need to be able to know how to put together a podcast, know how to edit video, know how to tweet. You know, you have to know all the social media stuff that we didn't have to know when Bob and I first started. All we had to do is concentrate on the story, which now I view as a luxury, honestly. But I think we still need really good journalists. And if people aren't studying it, then they're not going to be there in the future. So definitely recommend it.
Journalism, despite the criticism it gets by, you know, some folks, and obviously no industry or business is without need for criticism, but journalism is still, I think, a noble profession. You know, one of the reasons you get into journalism is not really to get rich, but because you enjoy the work. You like going out, talking to people. You like writing. And you also like informing people about what's going on in their hometowns and in their regions. It's really a foundation of democracy in some ways. You know, we need informed citizenry to be able to make sound decisions on, you know, which candidates they're going to vote for. And, you know, newspapers need to provide that information. It can be a very rewarding job. And as Kathy said, you know, when we first started, you know, you had a deadline at 5 o'clock or 7 o'clock at night, and that was it. But nowadays, journalists need to be a lot more nimble, be able to, you know, report news as soon as it happens and then flesh the story out throughout the day. So it's a very challenging job, but it's also a very rewarding job.
It's a very fun job. Honestly, I had fun every day I worked at the paper. And I feel lucky that I had a job that was so much fun.
I'm sure every single week was a new adventure, and then especially in the craziness of election season. So thank you again. I couldn't agree more. And I think now, more than ever in recent memory, you know, the world is clearly seeing the difference of what it means to live in a democracy versus a dictatorship. And one of the hallmarks of that is a free and open press. And one of the hallmarks of that is also candidates appearing before voters on a campaign debate stage. So I really appreciate you both giving perspective to listeners as the Lehigh Valley, at least for a moment, takes center stage in the Pennsylvania Democratic Senate primary. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. It was fun.
Thank you for tuning in to a special episode of Pennsylvania Kitchen Table Politics. Please join us for future episodes by subscribing, and while you're at it, give us a rating and a review. We love listener feedback, so drop us a note via our website, papoliticspodcast.org. And a very special thanks to Jake Schwartz for all his production assistance. I'm Ari Middleman, and this is Pennsylvania Kitchen Table Politics.